You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
On tonight's segment of personal finance, I have with me
an author, Uvangile Magwagwa. And before we bring her online, I want to give you this food for thought. A LendingTree survey found that 37% of women weren't able to save money versus 22% of men, despite them being less likely to splurge, enjoy shopping for themselves, or go into debt from non-essential spending. So today, we're going to discuss, are men generally better with money than women? Is it a myth? Is it that black and white? Vangile, I need you. Good evening. Hello, Vangile. Do I have you on the line? Vangile? Okay, while we get her on the line, I do want to share a bit of my thoughts on this, right? I don't know if you know this, but in the world all over, there is what we call the gender pay gap. Right? The gender pay gap tells us that there is a disparity between what women are making and what men are making. Yeah? So, that being the case, I believe that it's not that women are bad at managing money. It's just that women have less money to manage. But that's my view. We have an expert in the house today, and I hope that she'll be able to shed some light. Vangile, are we winning this time around? I'm having difficulty hearing you. I don't know if it's me. Vangile, I think I'll hear you now.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, loud and clear. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I am doing very well. How about you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Vangile, apparently we don't know how to spend money. We don't know how to manage money. What is going on with us ladies? I thought we had this thing.
No, we do. But what you said at the beginning is really on point.
Yeah.
And as men, most times, we still earn for the same position. Mm-hmm. So that means that we are working the same amount of hours, sometimes longer, for less money than our male counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it looks like we're bad at managing money, but we just don't have a lot to go around.
No, we just don't. I know a lot of people are talking about like how women are now starting to out-earn men.
Mm-hmm.
But that, when they're looking at the dating pool and all of that.
Yeah.
But actually, people are not comparing apples to apples.
They're
like
not.
If we are both in the same, who's earning more than who?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
I mean, there's many factors, right? It's also how we are educated as women.
Mm-hmm.
The studies show that when parents are educating girls and boys,
yes.
Boys are the ones that are expected to take over the family empire, and they are the ones that are seen as the ones that will move the family forward financially. So they are actually given more financial literacy education than women.
Yeah.
Which I think is intuitively, we all know that,
yes.
Right? And we all understand that. So that starts to impact us. And there's the fact that, like, our self-esteem, right? Like women tend to be more, have lower self-esteem than men, right?
Ooh, okay.
So we've often heard the whole idea that like men are so egotistic,
yes.
But that's also very societal.
Mm-hmm.
Women are taught to be humble, be sweet,
yes.
Be cute, be loving.
Yes.
The minute you start to assert yourself and say, listen, this much and I am amazing at this, then you're seen as being so full of attitude, has been bratty, and we're called the B word often.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's no longer attractive, but the same qualities in a man are seen as attractive.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, studies show that women don't negotiate. When we are given the first salary offer, when we're given the first price on a car, on a house, we often take it, believe it or not.
Vangile,
we actually don't negotiate.
Why are you telling people my
business? And so we lose money.
Why are you telling people my business? Kala, let's start there. What's going on? Keep going.
No, I just find that so fascinating. So if you look at it, like studies in the US, and I'm sure it's the same in South Africa, show that over the lifetime, especially when it comes to Black women, right, most of us not negotiating, plus systemic racism, you leave about in your entire lifetime of working about something like $900,000 on the table. Now imagine how much that is in South African rand, and that's in terms of income. And if you had that income, that extra income, you would actually end up saving more and investing more. So it may be, I mean, we all can agree that's almost $1 million. Like in South African rand, that's insanely
rand.
Like 18
almost
million.
20, yeah. We've got you back on. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So because of all those factors that I shared, we don't negotiate. Mm. So that means that we have less money to invest and save.
Yes.
Now, imagine you're also buying a house. This is one of the most important assets, right? Men would negotiate, but again, remember, as women, we're taught to be the good girls, to be nice.
Yes.
So we're really scared of going in and negotiating hard, like offering way less on a property than, say, our male counterparts. So even when that property does appreciate in value, because we probably haven't paid less than what our male counterparts have paid for, we lose out on the appreciation value in terms of refinancing and other things, then we end up actually paying more on the bond.
Okay, Vangile. I need us to
So there's all these like little things over time that start to impact us, because it doesn't seem like a big deal that we are not as confident that we are the sweet, good girls until you start looking at its financial impact on us.
And I really need us to take this bit by bit. I need us to take it in chunks, because I want whoever's listening to this, particularly the woman, at the end of the show to actually have a tool to use for their next engagement, whatever that engagement will require of them, right? But before we go there, before we give our women tools, I want them to know who is giving them these tools. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions just so that we can, Nyabona, let people know who you are, build your street cred, and so that we will actually have a good idea of who this Vangile is. Vangile, what makes you happy?
Yes. I think for me, really, sunsets, meditation, and yoga.
Okay.
Sunsets over the ocean. So I'm actually sitting on my bed watching a little bit of an ocean view.
Okay.
And the sky.
That sounds like a dream. That sounds like a dream. Okay, first question done. Second one, who is your favorite person right now?
I think my favorite. We're really, really gelling. I mean, you know, in relationships, sometimes you're like on the, oh my God, we get each other phase. And other times you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, we missed that. Who was your favorite person? The line sabotaged us there. Who did you say it was?
My husband at the moment.
Yeah. And how long have you been married?
I've actually only been married a year, so you could say I'm still in the honeymoon stage.
Yes, you are. And I hope it gets sustained. I hope it's sustained, that honeymoon phase, you know? Okay, next question is, what do you do for a living, and why should we be listening to you right now?
Oh, so I'm a money trauma coach, but
Okay.
that's actually not why you should be listening to me, right?
Okay.
It's also that I have my background is in finance. I
Okay.
have a business science finance degree from UCT
Yeah.
in Boston, Massachusetts, but that's still not why you should be listening to me. You should
Not
be listening
that's.
to me because I've gone on my own financial journey. I was $60,000 in debt. I chucked out the textbook, all those fancy degrees that I just told you about, and I decided to figure myself out, and I've helped hundreds of women get out of it. A lot of my clients share that they get out of debt without doing a budget with me, which I love that fact, right? I've helped women start to quit their jobs, start businesses, travel, all that. And I think so. I know my work works.
Vangile, did you say dollars with a D, or did you mean to say rands?
Dollars with the D.
Okay. I need to hear the story. What happened? Why did you get into so much debt? And I know you mentioned your school, right? Your fees. Why did you get into so much debt? What didn't you know before that you know now that is changing people's lives? I want to hear the story because you said it's the reason why we should be listening.
Yes, so because just like most people who go and get an education, right? I thought would solve my financial problems, but not really an education. For me, it was getting a finance degree, because I had seen my nurses, engineers, all that, right? I'm very lucky. I always say I'm very lucky on my dad's side and my mom's side. I grew up with people that all went to university.
Okay.
My mom, his siblings, my dad, his siblings. So I knew that education can be powerful, but I also knew that it wasn't solving the core issue of financial freedom, which is why I chose finance. You know, I thought it would teach me something. So, but then as soon as I got out of UCT, I literally spent my first paycheck in like a week.
No.
Not even a serious.
Okay. What did you spend it
jobs
on?
Jobs throughout university. I can't even remember. That's the thing. It just, I always had this feeling that like, money is not enough.
Yeah.
You know? So it didn't matter what I did. I just I couldn't buy a credit card. One day I go to one of the banks. I buy my bank card and I'm like, okay, I oh, like the Tuesday to pick up my card. Imagine. So I'm without cash, can't do anything. And when I go into the bank, it was almost like I thought at the time, a gift from the heavens, right? I walk in and lady got a job. A credit card. And I remember saying to her, what would I do with a credit card? Now, just for context, I'm 21. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm like thinking, what am I going to do with the credit card? It feels so grown up at the time. And she goes, you can go shopping. And I was like, backtrack, I can travel? And she says, yes. And there starts my story of me and debt. Because I'd always wanted to travel. It's like she having my credit card. I moved to Orlando, Florida.
Oh, girl.
I started traveling, and every country I lived in, I got a credit card because now I had figured out the game, right? Is that I can get a credit card and keep traveling, and I just moved from country to country. So it was almost like I was this fraudster. Like I would get to a country
Yeah.
and get a credit card and move on and just travel that way.
Do you
It
know,
was
yeah, do you know the Netflix,
mental.
do you know the Netflix series Inventing Anna?
I
You
know.
were inventing Vanilla, because what do you mean? Scam artist of
I
nerds.
actually wrote an entire blog on the Wealthy Money blog where I explain inventing Anna and the underlying trauma of that because I have lived that. So I always say to people, if you think of inventing Anna, I am the
Literally, that's who you are. That's who you were,
from
rather.
friends and then spends it on other people. I did that. I did that.
And what did that
Other
do?
friends to wine and dine them.
Oh no. What did that do to your psyche?
Yes.
What did that do to your psyche? Because I know that debt, while you're having it, while you're enjoying it, is great, right? There are no cares in the world. But what happens then when you have to face the music? Because you were dancing, you were having a good time. But now, when the actual music went off and the music of reality and all your debt started facing you, what did that do to you?
Oh man. When all that started to happen, I started having panic attacks with money.
Of course.
So I would go to the bank to withdraw money and I'd have a panic attack. I'd go to buy bread and milk that I couldn't get out of bed. So I was depressed for like a year and a half or so. It was really, really bad. You know, life and the world. Because I just thought, it just got to a point where I do have a conscience, right? Where I just felt like, oh my God, everybody. And they can see how bad I am with money. A lot of self-talk around this. And in the end, I just couldn't get out of bed, which really kickstarted my healing journey. So when I say to people, this is why you have to listen to me, this is why. Because I know what it's like to not want to get out of bed, not to face the world, not to be able frozen by shame, by guilt, by the feeling that you're failing in life, all of that. So then I just went on a journey. You know, I started meditating, I went vegan, I practiced yoga. But more than anything, I looked at behavioral finance thesis. I literally sat and read thesis on behavioral finance. And then I went and I started getting help. I got a financial advisor, I got a life coach. I went on a journey to find out what is it that other people know that I do not know, right? And how do I make sense of this? How do I fix this? So that was a whole journey. And I started really unpacking trauma and having a deep understanding of it, right? Understanding how trauma travels through inheritance. I really went on a deep journey. Right now, like I have a lot of therapists that are actually my clients, and they always say, how did you figure this out? Because we learn this in therapy. And I'm like, when your life depends on
Oh,
something, and my
listen.
life did, because I couldn't spend my life in bed. I remember when this happened, I was not even 28 yet, right? And I was like, I've got the rest of my life in front of me. I can't spend it in bed in a
Not like
bedroom.
this, not like
I need
this.
to get up. I need to do something. So I felt like my life depended on me figuring this out, right? And that's what I did. It became my full-time job.
And now it really is your full-time job. Wink, wink.
And now it is my
Nudge,
full-time
nudge.
job.
Love it. I love it. You know, I was asking you this not because I wanted you to rehash your story. You know your story. You lived your story. You've heard yourself tell it millions and millions of times. But here's the truth. There are people right now who are secretly harboring the shame of being in debt,
right? You said earlier that you felt as if everybody could see the mess you had made.
Yeah.
And nobody could.
Yeah.
Nobody could. But the truth is, you felt it severely. It crippled you. And I hope that everyone who heard you share that is feeling a sense of, I'm not alone. And I think this is why stories are so important, because they help people realize that this is not unique to you. Yes, it is your unique journey, but others have been here and they've traversed this journey, and so can you. And so very briefly, I know that this is your meat, right? This is your life's work. But very briefly, what are maybe the first three things you did outside of the meditation and the yoga, practical things towards getting out of debt that you did, that somebody who's listening to this can go, okay, let me try again. Let me wear some pants today. Let me actually brush my teeth and comb my hair and try something. What can people do tomorrow to get themselves on track and out of their way or on their way out of debt?
This is such a good question. The one thing I'm going to tell you guys, the three things that I did, yes, and people are going to be like, oh, because every time I tell it, everyone just goes, please don't.
Okay.
The first thing I did, and there's no escape from this. Mm. I just did this morning. I look at my bank account 5 minutes a day. I started looking at my bank account 5 minutes a day.
Okay.
Listen, I fall off this habit every so often.
Yeah.
The last few months I've been sucky at it, and it shows.
Yeah.
But once I'm back on it, it's just amazing what happens,
okay,
right? So for 5 minutes a day, I look at my bank account,
mm-hmm,
without judgment. I'm just looking at the transactions, looking how much is in there. I may write down the balance. I may write down what came in, what came out.
Yeah.
You know, but first things first, the 5 minutes, you're just looking, you're scrolling, you go back through your entire 3 months. It's, mm-hmm, 5 minutes. So you're looking, you're taking your time without judging.
Mm.
Important, don't judge.
Mm.
This is not a judgment exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Then for 5 minutes, I turn off my banking app, and then I sit with what's coming up in my body. I observe my breath for 5 minutes.
Oof.
And I also observe what's coming up in my body.
Mm.
And then I take out a piece of paper for 5 minutes, and I write down all the thoughts that I noticed when I was observing my breath.
Yeah.
So important thing, when you observe your breath, you are not trying to control the breath.
Mm-hmm.
You are an observer. You're noticing, oh my gosh, I can barely breathe. Oh my gosh, I'm holding my breath.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, my jaw feels so tense.
Yeah.
Oh, my leg feels hurt just from watching this bank account, right?
Mm.
And you're just observing also what thoughts are playing in your head, not trying to argue those thoughts, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
In those five, the next 5 minutes, you write down the thoughts,
okay,
right? That came up about you, money, all of that. Because remember, shame is all the hidden things that we also refuse to acknowledge,
ooh,
right? So now you're taking all that out and putting it on paper.
Okay.
After that, you've got, so those are the three actions. You then have two, you then have the one option, which is behave with money when I have this thought, who would I be? What would my finances look like if I never had this thought? So you ask yourself these three questions with each thought. You deal with it individually. Some thoughts may take you the whole day, so don't bother. Just go about doing things on your day, write the questions down, and just keep coming back, because sometimes the thought is so deeply ingrained, we can't imagine who we would be if we never had this thought,
yeah,
right? Like, I know I don't have enough money. The idea that you could live your life without this thought can be so weird.
Mm.
Why? Like, it's not possible. That seems like a truth.
Yeah.
But once you, and it's important not to skip the first one, the first question, which is how do you behave with money when you have this thought?
Yeah.
Because it's teaching you how your thoughts are impacting your financial behavior.
Mm.
And from observing your breath and observing the sensations in your body, you're starting to higher body and your entire breath are impacted by your bank account and your relationship. So you're starting to change your relationship over time. Yeah. It's when we're looking at our breath and we're not changing the breath, we're simply making sure that the amygdala, the reptilian brain, realizing that you are safe and you don't have to keep reacting to anything that's happening in your bank account, right? So you're retraining that part of the brain and you're retraining your nervous system to just sigh and be calm with money, right? Mm-hmm. And over time, as you change, a lot of people think that I will change my relationship with money. Like I'll have money and it will change my behavior with money. That's not true. Sure. It's an inside out job. As you change your reaction to money and you change your behavior with money, your relationship with money changes. You will have more money. You will save more. You will start to pay.
And it makes sense even with every other relationship.
So powerful.
I was saying with every relationship that you have.
Money changes and then we change our relationship. No, it starts from within and then outside.
Yeah, similar to how the relationship you have with a person determines how you behave around them and how you treat them.
Exactly. Right?
And how they treat you too.
Yeah.
I really want you to rehash those questions quickly. You don't have to break them down. Just what are those three questions again? How do you behave with money when you don't have, please just rehash all the three questions.
So how do you behave? How does this thought impact your behavior with money?
Okay.
Who would you be without this thought?
Yeah.
And the third one is, I don't know if I phrased it like this before, but I usually phrase it like this with my clients, which is what becomes possible for you with financially without this thought.
Mm. And this is the thought you feel after you've looked at your bank accounts. Is that the thought we're referring to here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You probably are going to have like 5 to 10 thoughts, write them down. And it may be like 5 to 10 or 20 thoughts after each meditation. For the first few months, it's going to be common.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is you're unearthing all the things that have been driving your financial behavior by getting into this pattern of looking at money, allowing yourself to be triggered, and then allowing yourself to be still enough to examine the underlying beliefs. Over time, it will be less and less thoughts that come up for you.
Yeah. You know, I get why people would be like, oh no, give us something more. Give us something more practical, because things like these are so far removed from us, especially because we've never been taught that this is how we actually build a good relationship with money. But also generally, we're very uncomfortable with reflecting and with sitting down with our thoughts and our feelings and our emotions. So anything that drives us to that point makes us want to run away. And so we don't realize that in running away from this exercise, we're actually running away from the money that will come with us getting that relationship with money right. And, you know, you mentioned something earlier that really struck a chord with me, because I haven't been the greatest negotiator. And I know that this isn't unique to me. A lot of women haven't been. So now we've fixed our mindset and our attitude and our hearts towards money, right? And we're working towards building a great relationship with money.
And with regards...
Yeah,
sorry to interrupt. With regards to negotiation or pricing yourself,
that's where I was going.
I always tell my clients, especially if you're an entrepreneur, so pricing becomes a huge thing. But also if you're negotiating for a job or a promotion, you know what maybe your colleagues and other people at another company or even within the same company are earning. You found out that like you're under earning by a mile or even a little.
Yeah.
Go in, negotiate, and when they ask you what figure do you have in mind, say the actual figure and then keep quiet. That's what I teach all my clients. Say the figure and then keep quiet. Don't say anything else, because as women, we have the tendency to then say, oh, if that's too much, then then I'll give you this discount. But maybe, you know, now we're starting to preempt how they're going to behave. And then be you're back at your original figure, whereas you wanted a higher figure. So say the thing, wait it out, see how they respond. And if they come back to you and they're like, oh, that's too. This, you know,
yeah.
Or then you give them why that is not too much. Mm-hmm. Listen, I know that my industry peers are earning A, B, C, D, you know, and then you give all the ways in which you add value.
Mm-hmm. I love that because that's exactly where I was going, right? So I was saying we fixed our relationship with money, but now we have to actually, because we really can't test the solidity or the strength of something outside of actually testing it. We may know it in our minds, we may believe it in our hearts, but it's when it's put to the test and we have to practice what we know that we can really say, oh, no, I'm well on my way. I've got this thing sorted. So you've already told us you've done your research around what the actual price should be or what your value is in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you communicate that and you leave room. That's the first thing you told us. You leave room. But also substantiate. Why does this make sense? Why should we give this to you?
Yeah.
What makes this a good deal for us? Because at the end of the day, it is a value exchange, right? It is a service or a product exchange.
Yep.
So you'd want to highlight what value they would get from it. Now, how do we deal with rebuttals? Let's say you've said everything, you've given the industry peer amount, you've done the research, you've positioned yourself well, and the answer is no. Do we turn back? Or do we keep negotiating? Because I really want people to walk away with the skill and the tool of negotiating and being very proud of the fact that even though I got that offer, I put my foot down and there was at least a conversation.
Well, you can always ask. So the first thing you can say is, why no?
Mm.
So if you're negotiating with someone and they go no, you can ask, why no?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Why are you saying no?
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask? Oh, you don't even have to say why you're saying no. I like to say, can I ask why it's a no?
Mm-hmm.
And then often people will tell you their reasons. And then you can come back to them and say, oh, okay, I hear these are your reasons for that.
Yeah.
What if we negotiate at this price instead?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What if we do this, or what if we structure it in this way?
Mm-hmm.
So you can restructure the deal to say, what if we work on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if maybe you like working with the person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or you want a particular thing.
Mm.
You can restructure it and say, okay, I hear you. What if I can do A, B, C, D, and then we restructure it based in this way and I can still get there?
Yeah.
What would you say about that?
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's such an easy conversation to have after you've proven your value. What if you're just starting out?
Yes. I think if you're just starting out, right,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that I would say is sometimes it's great to say, okay, because they may argue and say that you don't have the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you come back and you say, okay, I can take your offer for 3 months,
mm-hmm.
but can we reevaluate in 3 months based on what I do for you in that time period?
Uh-huh. Hopefully they'll be
and if. Yeah, and even if you don't, you say to them, and you can even put that on the table and say, if in 3 months we don't want to move forward with this, neither one of us is happy, neither you feel like I got you good results, but you still cannot afford to pay that price. Would you mind writing me a testimonial or giving me a recommendation?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So at least you haven't wasted your time.
Yeah. Listen, I could go on and on and on speaking to you because there's just so much I think we can learn from you. And maybe we need to have you back on the show when we have a longer stretch of time to actually unpack these certain elements. But the question on the table was, are men better with money than women? And we've already established that it's not a discipline thing or a lack of inability to manage our finances. It's just that we don't have enough, firstly, to go around. And it's because we are not having the tough conversations. And you've just told
And nobody thinks it's important that we should have these conversations. Yes. Girls are not raised to know how to negotiate.
100%. And you've just told us to say, in fact, the negotiation conversation is a secondary conversation. The one you really need to start having is one with yourself. Is one with your past self and one with your future self, where you're able to say, this has happened, this is how I feel, and this is how we're going to move forward. That honesty. So that once you've had the conversation with yourself, then you can have it with whoever's sitting across from you on the table. Have I captured your thoughts and your sentiments correctly?
Totally.
We have to let you go. What is the one thing you believe I didn't ask you that you really think people need to know? And once you're done with that, let everybody know where they can find you, because I really think there's so much value to gain from you, even outside of this conversation.
So the one thing that I want people to know is it's never about the money, even when it is about the money.
Ooh.
I always say that.
Ooh.
It's never about the money, even when it is about the money.
Yeah.
Always remember that.
Jeez, where can we find you? How do we follow you? How do we inquire of your services? We also want to make big bucks.
You can find me at wealthy-money.com. Check out the Wealthy Money blog. Check out the podcasts on there. You can contact me from the website. The website is pretty, I want to say it's got some amazing tools. So just play around with it. I've got over 300 articles in the blog, and a lot of them explain a lot. And listen to my Money Magic podcast. It's incredible.
Mm.
But also, it's been voted one of the top 100 podcasts together with Dave Ramsey and Susie Almond for 2025.
Makes sense.
So that's according to FeedSpot.
Yeah.
And you can find me on Instagram under Vangile Makwakwa. Find me on TikTok at Wealthy Money Co. Or at Wealthy Money on Facebook.
You said the podcast is Money Magic, right?
Yes, all Money Magic podcast.
That's
it's available. It's on all the different platforms: Spotify, Podbean, iTunes, Amazon, all of it.
I'll probably be listening to the podcast on my way home because I really want to hear more. Vangile, you've been fantastic. Thank you so much. This is not the last we've heard from you, because there's so much more we want to learn from you, and maybe even talk about your book, because you are an author.
Yes, I keep forgetting.
That's for the next conversation. keep our numbers, because we will be calling you again for that next conversation. Thank you so much. Go enjoy your time.
No, thank you for me. Bye.
Thank you for giving us your time. Bye, Vangile. And that was that on that. If you missed that, listen to this.
Have you missed out on any interesting discussions from Adventist World Radio SID Media? Simply go to www.sidmedia.org to listen to all podcasts and previous shows. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.